Now we're recording again, talking with Terry Clark.
Yeah, so we used to offset the Jindavik with the radar, so the missile thought it was about 30 feet from where it was. We had four high-speed cameras, two in each wing, pointing up and down, so they would fire the missile at Jindavik, and just before it arrived, they would start the high-speed 35mm black-and-white film cameras and film the missile going past Jindavik. Then they would sit down and process the film and work out that it missed it by 30 feet, which is the offset we'd set in, and therefore it was a direct hit, and we saved $250,000 Jindavik. We sometimes shot them down because the trials requirements were to shoot them down, but generally speaking, we had them offset so they missed. So I spent 3 years doing the airborne side, then I moved on to the ground side, which was all the ground control of the Jindavik when it was in the air. Jindavik, of course, took off on a three-wheeled trolley, went down the runway on a three-wheeled trolley, took off, flew around, went to its pre-assigned position to be fired at. Then when it came back, it had a skid that dropped down. That was a metal skid about a metre long and about 200 mils wide. And it would land on that skid. It was hydraulic buffer. And there would be a little metal wingtip. What do you call it? A wingtip protector. So that if it tipped from its... it would protect the wings. And depending on the requirements of the missile, what speed they wanted us and what height they wanted us, we would go with what we call clip wing. Jindavik had wings, clip wings, and a Viper, Armstrong Siddeley Viper jet motor, and we could do 550k at about 20, 30,000 feet. If we wanted to go up to 50,000 feet, we would bolt on the end of the wings 40-inch extensions, so it could go higher, better higher aspect ratio wings, or if we want to get really high, like 60,000 feet, we could bolt 90-inch extensions on, and then we get up above 60,000.
FA-18s.
Yeah, I think so. Then we could get up above 60,000 feet with the 90-inch extensions on. But then the problem was that the air was so rare up there, was getting the damn things down again because of the airflow over the control surfaces made it difficult. But it used to take a bit of time, but we got them down.
So after Jervis Bay, where did you go to then?
Well, it was only visits to Jervis Bay. And then before I left Woomera, I decided to give electronics away. And I ran all the entertainment and recreation in Woomera for a couple of years. That was the swimming pools, the squash courts, the tennis courts, the theatres. I was responsible for all the movies that were shown up there. I organised live shows for local talent and all that sort of thing. And then I came down to Adelaide, and whilst in Woomera, apart from having a part-time photographic business, I had a part-time insurance agency. So when I moved down to Adelaide, I moved in. I moved in with the Prudential Insurance Company on a full-time basis and sold insurance for quite a long time. And in the meantime, I met and got involved with a lady called Leslie Grady, who was working at the University of South Australia. And her job eventually became that of logistics coordinator for their Southern Hemisphere Space Studies program. And I got involved with that, with all the astronauts that were coming over, and that's how I got involved with the Space Industry Association. I met up with Michael Davis, who was on the management committee of the SHSSP, where people came from all over the world to a six-week, 24/7 course on space studies, where they had a broad brush, a broad brush overview of space and space skills. So when they went back to their country and took up a position where they were overall in charge of a group of people in the space industry, they understood all the different space aspects of space, the law and all those things they needed to know. And we used to have a group, every year a group of Chinese came in a week before the course started, and they did a week's intensive English learning. And they used me as a lecturer to talk about my Air Force and rockets and things like that. So they picked up the English words for things they didn't... They knew about them, ailerons and elevators and rockets and things like that, but I was able to give them the English pronunciation and the English words. So I spent a lot of time doing that. And I did a lot of photography for the Space Industry Association and got invited to all the different lectures for the astronauts. And I went to, with Leslie, I went to IAC in Milan, in Naples in 2012, where we met that was 2 weeks after Armstrong died. So there was a big eulogy meeting with a eulogy, and there were about 8 astronauts there giving their eulogies to Armstrong. One was Buzz Aldrin and Paolo Nespoli, and the Krikalev, the Russian guy, who was the last Soviet citizen. He was caught up on the space station when the Soviet Union collapsed, and he was there. And also, it was only 2 weeks after Curiosity landed on Mars, and they had all the graphics and all the pictures of, not from Mars, but of how Curiosity worked and how they landed it gently on bits of string. Well, not string, but... So that was a very interesting IAC. And then, of course, when they were organising IAC in Adelaide for 2017, I was on the periphery of all that, and I went to IAC 2017. And here I am... Here I am now at the Avalon 2019, mainly because I like to try and do something totally different every year, and I've never been to Avalon, so this is one of my this year's do something different things.
And who did you meet today?
Ah, who did I meet today? The man you must go and meet. If you go around to the Martin Baker ejector seats, so if you go around to the Martin Baker ejector seat stand, you'll find a young guy there, very black hair, about 20, 23, and he is the great-grandson of Martin.
Well, that's quite a find.
Yes. I wander around, talk to these people, ask questions, and look at their name tags, and when you do that, you find some interesting people. At the last SHSSP... there was a young guy working there his name was Frank Cowdrey, and I talked to him and I said, that's a famous cricketing name, because Colin Cowdrey played over 100 test matches for England, and Frank Cowdrey, who was working at UniSA, is his great nephew.
Well, Terry, thank you for joining us on the space show.
That's my pleasure.